Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Diego Maradona is widely believed to be one of the best football players ever. He helped lead Argentina to victory in the 1986 World Cup. But like many former star players of the sport known as soccer in the United States, he has not done as well as a coach. Last month, the 57-year-old from Argentina stepped down as coach of a football team in the United Arab Emirates. He also coached the Argentina national team from 2008 to 2010. Now, the 1986 World Cup champion has moved on to Belarus. This week, Maradona joined the Dynamo Brest Football Club in the Belarusian Premier League. However, he serves as the club chairman and not as a coach. In a statement on their website in May, the club said, Diego Maradona will supervise areas of the club's strategic development and also cooperate with its structural departments, including the Academy of Dynamo Brest. Maradona thanked the club in a post on the social media website Instagram. He published a photograph of himself with his new contract, seated on a white leather couch with a Belarusian flag over it. Dynamo Brest has won the Belarus Cup twice in 2007 and 2017. They also won the country's Super Cup this year. The team placed fourth in last year's national championship. Soccer observers were surprised by the former soccer great's decision. Manuel Veth, editor-in-chief of the Football Grad website, expressed his surprise on Twitter. Others on social media expressed surprise and happiness over the news. Maradona is ours, one user from Brest wrote on Twitter. Lost for words, Sergey Erm wrote on Facebook. As a player, Maradona may be most remembered for his Hand of God goal against England at the 1986 World Cup in Mexico. He was thrown out of the 1994 World Cup in the United States after failing a drug test. Drug abuse and weight issues have troubled him since his playing days. Maradona has befriended controversial leaders as well, including Cuba's Fidel Castro and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. In 2017, Maradona met Russian President Vladimir Putin, who he said can bring peace to many in this world.
This is What's Trending Today. How far would you go to make a good impression at a new job? A college student in Alabama walked 32 kilometers in the dark to get to his new job. The story begins with Walter Carr's car breaking down the night before starting a new job at Bellhop's, a furniture moving company. Carr was unable to find a ride. So he figured out how long it would take to walk from his house to the job in Pelham, 32 kilometers away. He left at midnight so that he could make it to the customer's house by 8 a.m. the next morning. Pelham police saw him walking along a highway at 4 a.m. So they stopped to see if he needed help. After hearing his story, they took him to a restaurant for breakfast and then to a church where he could safely wait until 8 a.m. The police then took Carr to the home of customer Jenny Lamy. Lamy said that even though Carr had just walked the entire night, he refused her offer to rest. He just wanted to start working. While he worked, he talked with the customer, telling her how much he liked her kitchen. Reporter Carol Robinson of the Birmingham News wrote that Carr also shared another story with his customer. He told Lamy that he and his mother moved from New Orleans, Louisiana, to Birmingham, Alabama, after losing their home in Hurricane Katrina. Katrina was an extremely destructive and deadly hurricane that hit the Gulf Coast of the U.S. in 2005. Jenny Lamy later wrote this on Facebook. "I just can't tell you how touched I was by Walter and his journey. He is humble and kind and cheerful, and he has big dreams. He is hardworking and tough." She then started a GoFundMe page to help Walter with money to get his car fixed. When the CEO of Bellhops, Luke Marklin, learned of Carr's story, he drove from Tennessee to Alabama to give Walter his own 2014 Ford Escape. Walter Carr's story touched many others around the United States. Within a few days, people gave over $73,000 to his GoFundMe page. Carr has decided to give a part of the donations to the Birmingham Education Foundation. And he has received more offers for jobs and scholarships for schools. And that's what's trending today. I'm Ana Mateo.
The English language has a lot of adjectives. Some estimates put the number at several thousand. And while those numbers may sound frightening, adjectives can be exciting. In English, many adjectives come from verbs. In today's program, we will tell you about participial adjectives, adjectives that we make from verbs. To understand these adjectives, we must first get to know participles. Don't worry, participles are simpler than they sound. A participle is a word that is made from a verb and usually ends in ing or ed. For example, the verb to surprise can be made into the words surprising and surprised. Participles can act as one of three parts of speech: a verb tense when used with the verb to be, a gerund, or an adjective. Today, we turn our attention to adjectives. Participial adjectives are used just like normal adjectives. In other words, they can appear before a noun, such as in the words surprising results, or they can appear after linking verbs, such as in the sentence, "The results were surprising." There are two types of participles: the present participle, which ends in ing, and the past participle, which ends in ed. Adjectives with ed endings tell us how people feel about something or someone. It is less common for words with the ed ending to describe non-living things, situations, or ideas. And adjectives with ing endings often describe a quality of a person, thing, or idea. They describe the thing that causes a feeling or emotion. Let's look at two examples of the verb to shock as a participial adjective and compare their meanings.
I was shocked by the president's words. The president's words were shocking.
In the first sentence, shocked tells us how the speaker felt. In the second, shocking describes the thing that caused the speaker's feelings, the president's words. In other words, the shocking words made the person feel shocked. English learners sometimes have trouble choosing between the endings. This is especially true for certain adjectives, such as bored, boring, interested, interesting, and confused, confusing. There are two common mistakes that happen when learners choose the wrong ending. One, the person incorrectly uses ED to talk about the thing that caused the feelings in someone. Or, two, the person uses the wrong ending to express their intended meaning about someone. Listen to an example of the first problem.
I don't like Professor Holt. His writing class is so bored.
In this example, the person incorrectly used the ED ending to describe the thing that caused boredom, the writing class. Here is the correct way to say that.
I don't like Professor Holt. His writing class is so boring.
Or, if they wanted to express their feelings about the class, they could say this.
I don't like Professor Holt. I'm always bored in his writing class.
Sadly, we can't do anything to make Professor Holt's class more fun. Let's look at an example of the second common mistake, using the wrong ending to express an intended meaning about a person. And let's continue with Professor Holt. Listen.
Professor Holt is so bored, I always fall asleep in his class.
Remember that the ED ending is used to describe the feelings of someone. So, this example means that the professor feels bored. But we know that this wasn't the speaker's intended meaning. Here's the intended meaning.
Professor Holt is so boring. I always fall asleep in his class.
This example expresses a quality about Professor Holt, which is that he is a boring person. Here is a tip from the British Council on how to know which ending to use. Remember that people can be boring, but only if they make other people feel bored. This same tip applies to other participial adjectives. Another common difficulty is mistaking participial adjectives with continuous verb tenses or with passive voice verbs. First, let's talk about continuous verb tenses. These are formed with the verb to be plus the present participle. So, participial adjectives ending in ing can look like a verb tense. Listen to two examples with the word annoying and guess which one uses a continuous verb tense and which uses a participial adjective.
The baby's cries are annoying the tired travelers. The baby's cries are annoying, and the travelers are tired.
If you guessed correctly, you are within the top percentile of English speakers. That's right, even native English speakers have difficulty telling the difference. The first sentence uses the present continuous verb tense. But in the second sentence, annoying is a participial adjective. It describes the baby's cries, which is the thing causing the speaker's annoyed feelings. The word are in the second sentence is simply a linking verb. English speakers also sometimes cannot recognize the difference between passive voice verbs and participial adjectives. Both are formed by the verb to be plus the past participle. Listen to two examples and test yourself.
The child was amazed by the clown. The child was amazed.
Tell us which sentence you think has a passive voice verb and which has a participial adjective with a linking verb. Well, we hope you feel as inspired by the exciting world of participial adjectives as we do. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. World War II finally ended in August of 1945. Life in the United States began to return to normal. Soldiers began to come home and find jobs. Factories stopped producing war materials and began to produce goods for peacetime. At the same time, other changes began to take place in society. Many Americans were no longer satisfied with their old ways of life. They wanted something new and better. And many were now earning enough money to find that better life. Millions of Americans moved out of cities and small towns. They bought newly built homes in suburban communities outside busy cities. Today, we look at the growth of suburbs and other changes in the American population in the years after World War II.
And we'll have the living room right in here, and the kitchen right here, so we can see the children playing in the yard.
Yeah, the children. Children? Say, how many are you planning on? Not more than six, I hope. Maybe I better add a few more rooms back here at that.
A married couple in a marketing film for the home building industry. The United States counts its population every 10 years. The first census took place in 1790. At that time, the country had about 4 million people. 100 years later, in 1890, the population was 63 million. By 1950, there were more than 150 million people living in the United States. In the early years of America, the average mother had 8 to 10 children. Living conditions were hard. Many children died at an early age. Families needed a lot of help on the farm, so it was good to have many children. But over the years, birth rates fell. Families began to have fewer and fewer children. By 1900, the average woman had only three or four children. In 1936, during the Great Depression, the average American mother gave birth to only two children. Things changed after World War II. Suddenly, it seemed like every family started having babies. Parents were hopeful about the future. There were lots of jobs. People felt the need for a family and security after the long, difficult years of the war. From 1950 to 1960, the number of children between the ages of 5 and 14 increased by more than 10 million. The increase in births after the war produced what became known as the baby boom generation. An estimated 78 million Americans were born between 1946 and 1964. Many of the new parents moved to homes in the new suburbs built outside the urban environment of cities. Usually, a developer would buy land, maybe from a farmer, then clear it, level it, and build houses on it. Young families would buy the houses with money that they borrowed from local banks. Life was different in the suburbs, calmer, less crowded than life in the big city. There were all sorts of group activities. There were Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, parent-teacher associations at school, outdoor cooking, where families gathered in someone's backyard to eat hamburgers hot off the grill. Historian William Manchester described life in the suburbs in this way. The new suburbs were free, open, and honestly friendly to anyone except black people, whose time had not yet come. Manchester wrote, families moving in found that their new friends were happy to help get them started. Children in the suburbs exchanged toys and clothing almost as though they were group property. When little Bobby outgrew his clothes, his mother gave them to little Billy across the street. People felt safe enough to leave their doors unlocked. Parents did everything they could to make life good for their children. Between 1950 and 1960, the number of boys playing on Little League baseball teams increased from less than 1 million to almost 6 million. The number of Girl Scouts increased by 2 million. Bicycle sales doubled. And it wasn't just two-wheeled transportation that experienced a boost.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee. Performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA. See it in your Chevrolet.
U.S. new car production was stopped during World War II to allow those factories to produce airplanes, tanks, and other military vehicles for the war effort. With the prosperity of peacetime, many Americans visited auto dealerships for the first time in years to replace that tired family car with something more up-to-date, even luxurious. For many years, popular singer Dinah Shore invited optimistic post-war Americans to take to the highway and see their country in a Chevrolet.
And see in your Chevrolet.
War prosperity also led Americans to replace outdated home appliances, buy a new refrigerator or a television set.
Come closer, sweetheart. Well, say, I don't think that's fair, because we can't get closer.
Oh, but you could. If you had one of the new Westinghouse television sets with the exclusive electronic magnifier that gives you a big close-up image whenever you want it. All you do is turn the electronic magnifier knob, and there, you get the heart of the picture. And see, I'm close enough to say, hello, good looking.
Actress Betty Furness was commercial spokeswoman for Westinghouse.
And every Sunday night, General Electric brings you the finest motion picture stars on TV. The great names in comedy, in mystery, in romance. Every week a star, all summer long, on the General Electric Theater.
Over at competitor General Electric, actor Ronald Reagan, later the 40th President of the United States and often referred to as the Great Communicator, was for many years an effective television commercial spokesman every week on the GE Theater. Also tried to improve their children's education. In 1960, parents bought almost three times as many educational books as they did 10 years before. Parents also bought millions of dollars worth of pianos, violins, and other musical instruments for their children. It was true that the average number of children per family was increasing, but the total population of the United States did not increase as much during this period as one might have expected. The reason for this was that fewer immigrants were coming to the United States. In fact, the number of immigrants had been dropping for many years. In 1910, 11 immigrants were coming to America for every 1,000 Americans already living here. By 1950, less than 2 immigrants were coming for every 1,000 Americans. Where immigrants were coming from also changed. In the past, most came from Northern and Western Europe. But now, growing numbers of people came to the United States from Southern and Eastern Europe and from Latin America and Asia. Other changes in the United States population were also taking place. In the 1950s, most Americans still lived in the eastern, central, and southern parts of the country. But growing numbers moved west. The population of the western states increased by almost 40% during the 1950s. Remember we said the United States population gets counted every 10 years? One reason is because populations are used to decide how many members each state will have in the House of Representatives. Population changes can mean changes in the political influence of individual states in Congress. Another population change after World War II was in life expectancy. An American born in the early 1900s could only expect to live about 47 years. By the 1950s, however, most Americans could expect to live well past their 60th birthday. Life expectancy continued to increase, with improvements in living conditions and medical care. The United States was a changing country, a nation on the move after World War II.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.